Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. The power of song was the topic of the most recent presentation in the Ales and Ideas Education Series, a project of Clatsop Community College and the Fort George Brewery at the Lovell Showroom. Speech instructor and professional opera singer Deke Guidi and Astoria Fisher poet, amateur songwriter, and English instructor Nancy Cook shared the highlights from a humanities special topics class devoted to academic exploration of the power of song.
One of the things that's been really important to us is thinking about the power of song for educators and recognizing that, especially for historically marginalized groups who are often very, they have a huge body of knowledge when it comes to song, but they may not feel heard in schools. So that makes a lot of sense to us, and I've seen the excitement and also the attendance level. The only day that our class wasn't full to almost overfull was the day the rough draft was due. Did you notice that? There was a few less people there. But there's been an excitement to be there, and that's really important. I think a bonus outcome to incorporating song in the classroom is that it helps students build their own media literacy toolkit. We too frequently villainize youth culture and set it aside without actually examining what's happening it and giving them the tools to think about the messages they're receiving in media. This is a way one teacher is using song in her history classroom. No, I think this is a lit classroom. This is not the official music video.
Ancient Greece in order to make some beauties at a wedding, the handsome girls had to make a choice who was most fair of all the goddesses there, the golden apple.
That's just one way you might use music in the classroom to help with the memorability of the material you're covering and to get them excited. I think that we've thought a lot about how song affects sexual identity, and we are surrounded by messages that sometimes sensationalize sexual violence, blame victims, encourage negative stereotypes, and unfortunately, not all youth are taught the critical thinking skills they need to deal with these media messages. So confronting media's use of power and manipulation is an important aspect, and bringing song, which is the discourse of youth, to the table makes for a really interesting conversation. We wanted to bring this home in terms of, because I teach lit classes, as Julie said, and I think most people know the great poet Maya Angelou. She's been at inaugurations recently, and she was celebrated upon her death last year. This is one of her most famous poems.
Everyone in the world has gone to bed one night or another with fear or pain or loss or disappointment. And yet each of us has awakened and risen. Somehow made our ablution, seen other human beings, and said, "Morning, how are you? Fine, thanks, and you?" It's amazing. Wherever that abides in a human being, there is the nobleness of the human spirit. Despite it all, black and white, Asian, Spanish, Native American, pretty, plain, thin, fat, vowed or celibate, we rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Just because I walk as if I have oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like suns and like moons, with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high. Still I rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes? shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries.
So, in the interest of time, we're not going to hear her whole poem, but I wanted to turn you on to a collaboration she did with Ben Harper, who sings the same exact lyrics to a different population. And when I played these lyrics for my class as part of the discussion of the poem, it's amazing how committed they get to the poem.
You may write me down in a history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me down in the very dirt, and still like the dust I'll rise. Does my happiness upset you? Why are you best with balloon? Cause I laugh like I got an oil well pumping in my living room. So you may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, and I'll rise, I'll rise, I'll rise, out of the shacks of history's shame, up from a past rooted in pain. I'll rise, I'll rise, I'll rise, rise, rise. Now did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops weakened by my soul cries? Does my...
So again, we're not going to hear the whole of it because we have so much we want to share, but think about the impact of the two. And we've talked a lot about how lyrics and sound can and sometimes don't work together. It'd be interesting to ask a bunch of Ben Harper fans how many of them knew that that was a Maya Angelou tribute. We'll talk about that some more, but in the meantime, you can think about poem versus song.
Another thing that we really looked at the beginning, after we kind of looked at the impact of classical music and the Vivaldi and stuff like that, we started digging into the what I would consider kind of the great American songbook, and American history as shaped by music, and especially as shaped by song. And so as you can see from here, we studied Native American music and the power of like the powwow and how people connect through those kinds of events. We talked about the songs of the immigrants. There's this whole idea of becoming this patriot, and how people's identity shifted as they went into this new place, and how their songs reflected that sense of history and that sense of place. And one of the things that that we keep going back to is what Nancy and I have kept bantering back and forth as the original music video, because in large part, how did we learn about patriotism? How did we learn about a lot of the things that deal with American history? Well, if you were in my generation, you watched cartoons on Saturday morning, and in between Scooby-Doo and the Super Friends, you got Schoolhouse Rock, which again, we consider the original MTV.
Rocking and a rolling, swishing and a smashing over the horizon, what can it be? The pilgrims sail the sea to find a place to call their own. In their ship bag glower, they hope to find a better home.
Is it all coming back?
On Plymouth Rock, and someone said, we're there. It may not look like home, but at this point I don't care. Oh, they were missing Mother England. They swore their loyalty until the very end. Anything you say, King, it's okay, King. You know it's kind of scary on your own. Gonna build a new land.
But another thing that kind of comes out is some of the early Walt Disney songs.
Thank you.
These are the songs that are galvanizing people as Paul Revere is riding through Massachusetts saying, the British are coming, the British are coming. Also, and it just cracks me up, some of the instruments that they chose to use, and obviously they're very small and portable, but nothing says intimidation like a piccolo. Nothing says bad things are going to happen like a flute. It's a standard convention. All the Wagnerian operas are based on the flute. But what we also started to move into was how the African American experience totally kind of changed the landscape of music in the United States. As people are being brought from Africa, we looked at some of the songs of the slavery era and some of the things that were happening, like the call and response songs and the way that the songs were a way out. And these were some of the first songs that really started to express the struggle, right? And to start incorporating, and here we get the early roots of the blues, of jazz music, of folk music. I would even assert, to an extent, the American musical, in large part, kind of comes from this idea.
Looked at that song that's possibly about a child being taken from their parent, but also probably about the experience of being taken from your motherland. These early folk spirituals, many of them were coded too, like the slave owners would let you sing a song if it seemed like a church song instead of a song that seemed like you were complaining about your lot in life. So, but one of the things that we've looked at with African American music is how they're constantly reinventing themselves, but also through some of the same themes, how to come up out of suffering and make something beautiful of whatever your lot in life may be, because that is what we have to do. The power of song in the civil rights movement is truly amazing. In fact, that's what inspired us to teach this class originally. We had taught a class on civil rights, and to recognize the strength the communities had when they were fearing for their own lives in the churches of Birmingham, and truly these spirituals kept them together. And there was a beautiful interaction. Pete Seeger's a white northern folk singer, but he comes to this old gospel and he reinvents it in a way that it became a real anthem for the civil rights movement. And when was the last time you guys sang in a group? I see one person from my church out there. We really want you to sing. This is not a joke. This is a physiological experiment, okay? So this is like a karaoke version of We Shall Overcome. We can listen to one verse, and then we want you to experience a song.
We shall overcome. Oh.
all night about the music of the civil rights movement and the various protest artists our students help us study, but we wanted to take that experience of singing into a whole nother field, which is the physiological benefits of singing. This is the part where Deke pretends he's a scientist.
Like Nancy said, this is the part where I'm like one credit shy of my PhD in neurobiology, so just sit down. That's right. Get it together. The physiological benefits of singing, you might not think so much about singing, but I was having a voice lesson. Yes, I still take voice lessons. I'm 42 years old, and I still show up to my teacher and go, teach me. And she said something really profound one day. She was like, do you realize that you're relaxing as you're singing? And I was like, what? And she said, you take in a breath to support the sound, right? And then everything else is your body relaxing. And I was like, oh, what? Changed my life, you know what I mean? Because of the idea that, you know, to sing any kind of stuff, you have to be super relaxed. And especially if you're singing opera, and especially if you're a crazy coloratura soprano and you're trying to sing high E's and F's, you got to be pretty chilled out to be able to access everything up there. But the physiological benefits are something that we probably don't think of too much. It, you know, when you were singing just now, you heard the person next to you. You know what I mean? And you heard their voice. And you heard the people behind you, and you heard the people in front of you, and you couldn't help but hearing the obnoxious guy in front, because he's loud. And you couldn't help but all of a sudden, we became one. We breathed we took a breath at the same time, we hit notes at the same time, and for a moment, you know, for 30 seconds, we were unified. The whole group of us. That is very profound in the sense of taking care of yourself. Singing strengthens the immune system. How does it do that? I would jump down to the bottom. I love that it produces a cocktail of happiness hormones. Yes, absolutely. Oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin are released when you sing. It is literally... And I, as a person that has anxiety and depression, if I'm really in a weird place, I just bust out with some singing, and it cools me down. Why? Because I'm forced to take a breath. Because I'm forced to be aware of the air in my body. Because I am relaxing as I am putting all of that out there. And you can see, look at all of the places that are lit when you start to sing. You have the emotional reactions to music, and again, this is the part where, please do not judge my pronunciation, the cerebellum, yes, and the visual cortex, and I'm just throwing out big words now, hippocampus, big things, music for memory for the music, musical experiences. There's a part of your brain that engages that has to count. There's a part of your brain, if you're singing, you have to figure out the foreign language. There's a part of your brain that has to keep tempo. There's a part of your brain that has to understand the dynamics. Your brain is on music. Your brain does Pilates as you are working on music. You know what I mean? Yeah. Your brain has a six-pack from music.
The relationship between music and memory is a very hot topic right now. So Oliver Sacks is amongst others who are doing this. He calls music the quickening art. And I think our nursing students just happened to watch this whole documentary, which I really encourage you to see. We're just going to look at one little shift where you can see the way music therapy is being used with elders.
I'm 90 years old.
What was life like when you were a little girl?
Oh, God, I've forgotten so much. I'm very sorry.
Oh, it's okay. What have you forgotten?
I've forgotten what I used to do after I became a young lady. I've forgotten so much. I can't remember. I've been here 90 years, and if I could remember, I would tell you, but I can't remember.
I want to try an experiment.
What?
I want you to try and let the music take you back into your memories, to travel back into time. And then we'll stop, and you can tell me where it took you.
Come.
Ready?
Louis Armstrong.
She says it's Louis Armstrong. When the Saints Go Marching In.
Wow. Oh, he's saying when the Saints go marching by, and it takes me back to my school days. Mama told us not to go listen to him. We would sneak off at night, bring back pictures from the dance. And I was in King County 9 years. He built in King County. My birthday, November 20th, 19, I was in the wartime. I was working at Fort Jackson. And my son, on February the 4th, was 69. I didn't know I could talk so much.
It's really one of the most incredible things you've ever seen in your life, to watch this documentary and how music takes these people back. And it's so interesting because in the brain, if you're suffering from Alzheimer's dementia, the last thing that goes is music aptitude, which I think is very interesting.
But we also thought a lot about how groovy messages can sometimes get lost beneath groovy sounds. One of our students did YouTube, and I think most of you guys will remember this song, I would hope.
This is actually about the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King's shots rang out in the Memphis sky. So I thought it was like, oh, I love you, and then shots ring out. Oh, well, you know. And that is one of the things. The message is kind of covered up by the awesomeness of the tune. You know what I mean? And kind of the catchiness of all of that that is brought with it.
Yes.
Lastly, the last thing we did was look at the American, something that I think is a truly unique American art form, which is the musical. And we looked specifically at the musical Cabaret by Kander and Ebb, which is full of crazy stuff. But the biggest thing is that it was Hal Prince's first attempt at a concept. The music, the story is irrelevant to the metaphor. One of the things that emerges out of Cabaret that has never emerged before necessarily in the musical is that when you watch Oklahoma or Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, they just burst into song. Ah! You know what I mean? And they're singing, oh, what a beautiful morning. And they are unaware that they are singing because that's just part of the thing. In Cabaret, there are two things happening. They have those moments where they burst into song, especially with some of the other characters, but there's also what they call the book song, which is the comment song, which is happening where the people are on, they know they're on stage and they are performing. And so there's kind of a connection between that had never been seen before in terms of its meta realization of the theater. And so it's a very interesting thing, and one of the most chilling moments in the show is this.
This is in the film adaptation.
The stag in the forest runs free, but gather together to greet the stag. Tomorrow belongs to me. not somewhere a glory of age unseen? Tomorrow belongs to me.
Kind of chilling how this really happily sweet matriarchy motherhood song becomes this here in a second.
Not a sign, your children have made it to see. The morning will come when the world is mine. Tomorrow belongs, tomorrow belongs, tomorrow belongs to me. Oh, mother and father and child, a sign.
You, when you view that musical, you realize how your own naivety, your own narcissism, your own obsession with fame, hipster culture, whatever it may be, can make you complacent and blind to what's going on around you. And in this case, the cabaret of the 30s, it was the rise of Hitler. But the popularity of the piece on Broadway today is asking the same question: to which extent are we complacent to things that we don't care about? In part because we're just so obsessed with pop culture, right? So the notion that we think critically about music so that we do keep staying engaged citizens is also really important.
This has been The Human Beat, a monthly presentation of Coast Community Radio. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening.